Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here as we take a look at dealing with all those aches and pains and sprains and strains that can develop in the course of a winter season. I know I had this weekend to get out the snowblower for the first time and get that thing running and actually used it. And so I avoided shoveling. But our guests today have some advice. Well, actually, I had my daughter do a little shoveling on the sidewalks.
Perfect.
But Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenall with us today to talk about shoveling and a whole lot of other things relating to your physical health. Lori's a physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Great to have you along, Lori. Thank you so much.
It is so cold. Very cold.
And Bill Boisenall, of course, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospital and Clinics. And Bill, good to see you again.
Great to be back, as always.
Shoveling, I guess, is a fact of life. Man, I'm, you know, even though I have a snowblower, and I have a snowblower because I have a very large driveway. And, I mean, shoveling that driveway, it's just not in the cards for me.
I bought a snowblower for the first time last year. Because just for that reason.
Yeah.
It's really.
Yeah, but I shoveled yesterday.
You did? Well, I could
did
have shoveled.
Because it wasn't that much snow. And, well, it was early on Sunday morning. I didn't want to do that to the neighbors, get out the snowblower that early.
Yeah,
so.
6 in the morning.
So I shoveled, and then I had the kids come out and do some, too. So
Yeah, I understand that snowblowing is not as green as shoveling is, but as soon as my kids stopped shoveling, I bought a snowblower. And then after that, we bought a condo. That's how I've been dealing with the snow. But it doesn't work for everybody.
Well, does it cause a lot of injuries? Do you guys see a lot of injuries related to shoveling?
We see a lot of injuries related to ice. We see injuries related to shoveling, mostly low back, you know, back pain. It can exacerbate a pre-existing back problem. The loads on your back with that constant bending and twisting and lifting a heavy load, especially if the snow is wet, it can be really hard on your back, very hard on your back. So those are the big things. But probably what we see as much as of anything is injuries related to slips and falls.
Yeah.
Which, that's worse.
Yeah. Well, that can go with shoveling, but not exclusively only with shoveling. And I agree with Lori. I mean, I work primarily in a spine clinic, so people have injured their backs, but also injuring their shoulders with the repetition of the lifting and the twisting can get people into trouble as well.
Which shovels were the best? There are some that work better than others, I think, ergonomically speaking.
Well, they have those with the new ergonomic handles, which keep you from having to bend and twist so much. So, you know, for those people who, most people, the loads on your spine when you bend and twist are really challenging. So the ergonomic handles are better. I have a shovel with a longer handle, so apparently they're making some with longer handles, so I don't have to bend as much. And then they have the kind that that look a little bit more like a little plow. They have that little U-shaped handle, and it's a scoop, and you just walk behind it and push it. So you can stay nice and upright with that one, too, and just push the snow rather than the lifting part. But as my dad used to say, what you have to do is the first snowfall, you have to keep pushing it really far, because if you only push it to the edge, next snowfall, you got to lift it up and over the snowbank you made.
Yeah, over the bank, that's
so,
right.
So, yep, so your first shovel has to go all the way to the middle of the yard.
And so the length of the shovel, I'm sure, you know, makes a big difference. And they seem like, I'm glad to hear that they're making longer ones now.
Mm-hmm. Some are adjustable in length, which is even better.
Oh, yes.
Considering we're all different heights. But yes, the shorter it is, the shorter that shaft is, like Lori said, the more bending you have to do. And that's what can get people into trouble, that repetition.
Do you advise people to do this in spurts? I mean, in other words, maybe shovel for 10 minutes, go inside and come back out, or how? What's the best approach?
Well, you know what, my kids used to always yell at me, but I think they get it now that they're shoveling more. That is, if you're expecting a fair amount of snow, you shovel more than once. You don't wait till you have 8 inches of snow to move. You go out partway through and you shovel it when you have 2 or 3 inches. And you go out and shovel another 2 or 3 inches later. They'd say, well, it's still snowing, Mom. Well, yeah, I'd rather shovel 3 inches twice than 6 inches once, especially if it's wet.
Michael Perry had a very funny column here a few weeks back about his wife saying, "Why don't you go out and get that taken care of?" And no, it's still snowing. And
that was a scenario perfectly.
I love Michael Perry. He's got a great sense of humor. But yeah, and warm up. You know, I mean the amount of physical activity, and we looked at some research about this. The increase in your heart rate and blood pressure when you're shoveling is significant in the first 10 minutes of shoveling. Yeah. And not only that, just being in the cold increases the cardiac demand. So if you're talking about your heart and the physical workload, it's quite a bit just being in the cold, and then you add the shoveling on top of it. So getting yourself warmed up, making sure you're dressed warm so the cold isn't such an impact, and then working your way into it gradually and taking breaks, just like you would any other physical activity.
Yeah, and for some people, it's not feasible. Or physically, they're out there trying, but it's really not in their best interest. You know, sometimes there are volunteer groups that will shovel for people.
Yeah.
There are community service groups that maybe somebody could tap into to help out.
Anything with a snowblower, by the way? I don't have any trouble with my snowblower, but...
Yeah, the big thing is just don't put your hands in, you know, underneath there.
Well, yeah.
When it gets clogged full of snow and people lose fingers and toes, that's really the big thing. It is much easier on the back. Like Laurie said, with the shoveling, you're pushing and you're not lifting and twisting.
Yeah.
And but it's just being careful of keeping your fingers and your toes out from underneath that hood.
Yeah, and most of them have electric starts now, so you don't have to pull it. And most of them are self-propelled, so you don't have to push the thing. So,
yeah, I'm always thankful for that electric start, especially the first time of the year.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we have callers online. By the way, we have open lines. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Title of that page, The Larry Mueller Show. And let's go to Arlene in New Berlin. Arlene, hi. Thank you for calling. Arlene, are you there? Ah, we lose Arlene? I guess we lost Arlene. I'm sorry we did. Well, call back in case you were just distracted for a moment, Arlene, at 1-800-642-1234. Aside from shoveling and slips and falls, what kinds of other injuries are you seeing these days, Ms. Weather?
Mostly slips and falls.
Yes.
Related to the weather. That's the big thing. And then as people start to move inside, the weather starts to get cold, they get a little more sedentary. So it's really important, especially as you're starting to gear up for the holidays and winter is starting to come on, that you take whatever exercise program you had going on in the summer and fall and figure out a way to continue exercising through the winter. So, you know, if you were walking or running, find a place to do that indoors. And, you know, what tends to happen is, you know, the snow and cold came relatively early, at least by my recollection.
Much earlier than
that, yes. Living in Wisconsin. So people might not have been prepared with gym memberships or whatever it was. Then all of a sudden they're staring Thanksgiving in the face. And then the next thing you know, it's Christmas and New Year's. And now 2 months have passed and you haven't exercised. And then you're starting over.
There's another 8 pounds or so.
There you go, easily. So, you know, one of the things with shoveling is shoveling off roofs, you know, which you need to keep your roof clean and clear as possible. But there are people who get up on the roof that, of course, end up falling and having some major injuries. And, you know, there's the long shovels, the extended shovels that doesn't allow you to get to the top of the roof typically, but at least it gets you maybe 6, 8, 10 feet, you know, towards the gutter. But there's a clear correlation, not surprisingly, that the more snow on the roof, the greater the risk for injuries and, for the most part, slipping and sliding off the roof. And so really good footwear is important, with high traction soles or apparatus to put on your boots or shoes. Doesn't matter if you're shoveling your roof or out in your driveway or sidewalk.
Good points. And we have callers with questions and I think related questions as well. But let's go to Carolyn in Green Bay first. Carolyn, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. At the end of September, I had 3 vertebrae fused in my neck. And you know, the structural pain that I had is gone. But my neck just gets so tired. It's the weirdest feeling. I mean, is there anything I can do to just gently strengthen my neck?
Yeah, that's a real common issue post-surgery or sometimes post-whiplash injury. Head feels heavy, neck feels tired, and it's a combination of things, of muscles that are involved in the surgical procedure. They have to move. They have to cut through a little bit. The swelling that can go along with the surgery and, of course, any weakness you had before the surgery. There are strengthening exercises to do. You know, the key is, when is it safe for you to do that? When's your next follow-up visit with the surgeon?
Well, I just had one, and she didn't recommend physical therapy because I'm doing so well. So I don't see her again until January.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad the structural pain is gone, and that's a really good start for you. But I think it's reasonable to call back, and whether you talk to the surgeon or if there's a nurse practitioner or physician assistant there, and just describe what you're dealing with. And there are very gentle and safe ways to strengthen the neck. But not only your neck, your upper back and trunk are also important to decrease pressure on your neck. And
yeah, and my upper back and even chest muscles, they're all tight because I think I've been holding myself carefully for so long.
Yes, exactly, of course. Yeah, I would think it's safe to do those kinds of things, but you really need to get the okay from the surgeon. So, you know, I would call and just, you know, clearly state what you're dealing with, the discomfort you are having. That interferes with function, and I would think a referral to a physical therapist would be very appropriate, and they should be able to set you up on a home program very easily.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carolyn. Good luck. Arlene in New Berlin, thank you for calling. Hi.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be able to talk to you. I have had issues with my back all my life, not all my life, ever since I've worked in the hospital, lifting kind of heavy patients. But anyway, I'm wondering if your guest can give me the name or the title of a book that I could buy for stretching the muscles, you know, like in the lower part of my back and just all around stretching. I've done some that I've gotten from my therapist, but he said I'm too flexible that I don't need no more therapy from them. But, you know, you have to do these exercises every single day. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a book that I could buy at Barnes & Noble where I can get the stretching exercises that I need to do. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
So Arlene apparently has some exercises that she was given from her physical therapist, and I think she should continue doing those. There's a great book out there, and surprisingly it's called Stretching.
Oh, my goodness.
And the author's first name is Bob, and I can't remember his last
name. Is it Anderson?
Bob Anderson, yeah, and he's wearing a stocking cap. And many of his stretches. And it's a relatively inexpensive paperback book, but, you know, the stretches in it are pretty straightforward. He shows you different ways to stretch different muscles. He shows you which muscles are being stretched as you do it, and then he kind of lays out stretches. These are good stretches to do if you're going to go skiing. These are good stretches to do if you're going to go do this activity. So it kind of groups them for you, and it groups them by region. Yeah, Bob Anderson, thanks. Mm-hmm. Well, see, you thought you
I forgot, but that's the one I do remember. Remember.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good book.
And in case she has access to, say, DVDs or to YouTube or something like that, are there any that you know of?
Well, not off the top of my head. I mean, there's a million YouTube videos of people showing different stretching exercises. The other thing that she could try, and I'm not sure what her circumstances are, but there are yoga videos that have stretching. And your public library has
lots of those available for you to just check out.
Sure.
So if she wanted to introduce some variety over the winter, she could, you know, check out a couple from the library, mm-hmm. see if they seemed appropriate for her, and if not, take them back, try some different ones. Because there's mm-hmm. all kinds of different yoga. There's kind of strengthening yoga, there's postural yoga, there's stretching yoga. So,
yeah. Okay.
So that's another option.
And the advantage of that is you're stretching kind of whole body. It's not, you're not isolating one muscle, then the next.
Yeah.
Some people have local tightness, and then, so then you need a specific stretch for that particular area. But, you know, things like yoga, where you really work on postural control and you're stretching multiple parts of the body, that's more functional. And, you know, and I think in general, when people are stretching, the stretch shouldn't be so intense they can't breathe and relax into it. There's some evidence that shows you a little better results if you sustain the stretch for maybe 20, 30 seconds at a time, as opposed to 5 seconds or 10 seconds. And again, kind of, and warming up is something a little more aerobic to get the blood moving is a good way to help flexibility too.
Mm. Talking with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody today, we started on shoveling injuries, but now we're taking any kind of a physical therapy related injury with them. Call us at 800-642-1234, email us at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, we're learning how to avoid injuries in the winter, among other things, with our two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody from the University of Wisconsin. Bill's a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. So great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. Tom in Buffalo County has a question. So let's go to Tom. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Larry.
Hmm?
I've got Achilles tendonitis that I cannot get rid of. I mean, this started back in May after I took a long walk, and I play a lot of golf in the summertime. And I still have, like, a tender area that's about 2 inches long that just won't go away. And I wanted to start working out in the gym now. And the other mitigating problem here is that I have complete blockages in femoral arteries, so I have poor circulation in the legs. But I can't seem to get rid of that tender spot that's down there. I tried the Rice method and other things and through the summer, and nothing seemed to work. Any suggestions?
Okay, so the you tried Rice. What other things did you try? That's rest, ice, compression,
ice,
and elevation.
Rest, ice, yeah. Elevation, and compression.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
I was icing it a few times a day and stuff like that.
Anything else? Any particular exercises or stretching?
No, I don't have anything. I didn't go to the doctor or anything. I said, well, it'll just go away, and it just doesn't. And now I was thinking, well, do I need to go, or what should I do?
Yeah. No, it doesn't just go away. Achilles tendonitis is one of those nagging problems because you use your Achilles all day, every day. Every time you take a step, you use your Achilles. So it never really has a chance to rest. So the first recommendation I make for people is you need to go see somebody because you need pretty close guidance on getting over this, especially now that you're, 5 months down the road. So the longer it hangs around, the harder it is to get rid of. Also, as we get older, it tends to be more of a degenerative issue. And so that area, that sort of 2-inch area you're feeling is probably an area of degeneration in that tendon. So there are a number of strategies you can use,
I am 65, so maybe.
Yeah. So some of the things we tend to do are like a deep tissue massage there to kind of help the newly forming fibers reorient appropriately, and some very specific kinds of strengthening that focus on the negative phase, the lowering or eccentric type of muscle contraction. They'll look at your Achilles tendon length. They'll think about heel lifts. So usually it responds to kind of a number of different interventions all applied simultaneously. And you need a good evaluation to determine which of those are the right things for you based upon your presentation. So I would see a PT that, specializes in extremities, sports, things like that. It sounds like you're an active guy. and get some specific rehabilitation for it. And then they can kind of fold that into a gym membership for you if that's something that you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And once they get you over the hump, then they can also try to work on figuring out why this started in the first place. So you've been active for a long time. I mean, they'll look at your foot and ankle mechanics. Sometimes people need orthotics. Sometimes they need some core strengthening to minimize the pressure, you know, on the Achilles and that surrounding area. So that would be the second phase of the rehabilitation once they get you over that first hump.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you, Tom, for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Jonathan in Shorewood a chance to join us next. Jonathan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. I worked out in southern Utah this past summer, and I just before I left, I was seeing PT for really bad shoulder pain. I went out to Utah, stopped seeing a PT, wasn't doing any particular exercises, and the pain disappeared. And then when I moved back to Milwaukee in September, the pain came back. Any theories of why that happened?
Wow.
Do I need to move?
So what were you doing in Utah?
Well, I'm an actor, and I was doing some roles at the Shakespeare Festival.
Okay, so it wasn't to do physical activity at all?
No, I don't think it had anything to do with that.
Okay.
I wondered if it was the elevation. We're at a high elevation, and, of course, the extreme dry humidity. Does that have anything to do with it?
I haven't seen any correlation with that. So
maybe it's psychological.
Well, anyway, yeah. It's possible that whatever kinds of routine daily activities you do here, or how you live your life here, when you went out to Utah for this special gig, that just your routine activities changed in such a way that it decreased the load on your shoulders, and you came back and then loaded them again.
Maybe. I must admit, I do some home improvement work that might have something to do with it.
Oh, yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
The other thing that happened while I was out in Utah enjoying no shoulder pain, I tore my ACL.
Oh. Huh. Mm-hmm.
I am now 3 months post-op, and it's still, and I have been seeing a PT people, and it still is not good. And just to plug, I'm going to be playing Scrooge in A Christmas Carol this year.
Excellent.
Past, and I'm jumping around and doing some dancing. Will I do any damage?
Well, you will if you twist your knee and fall.
Right.
So, yeah. So at Christmas, let's see, you're 3 months out. Boy. You really need to talk with your PT and your surgeon. So, you know, there are time-based parameters where we know what happens when you heal and how the healing process goes. So that's one framework you have to think about. And certainly at 3 to 5 months, which is where you're going to be this time, you may be able to do some of those things. So that being said, then the other framework we look through is a criteria-based progression, and that is,
I just had a Biodex test.
Okay.
And testing my strength in quads and hams. And my surgeon, the surgeon that took over my case when I came back here, said that he doesn't need to see me again.
Okay.
But I need to strengthen my quads and hands,
right,
because they're weakened.
Okay. Right. So it's those are the issues. So do you have sufficient strength to jump and land safely and control your knee? So typically PT would see if you have sufficient strength to start a jumping program. So that was the purpose of the Biodex test. And so you need to have that conversation with your PT. Do I have enough strength to start jumping? And if so, how do I do this? And the PT should walk you through a progressive impact loading program that will close the gap between your current abilities and the demands of playing Scrooge in The Christmas Carol. And whether or not you can close that gap between now and the performance, I don't know. But your PT there should be able to help guide you through that.
Right. Is there any particular brace or something that I could or should be wearing?
There are no particular braces that will stabilize your knee for an ACL deficient knee, but you had your ACL reconstructed, so you should be good. So that being said, there's a large body of research that shows that just wearing a pull-on knee sleeve typically with a cutout opening for your kneecap, gives you enough compressive and tactile forces on your skin that it improves your position sense of knowing where you are in space, which can decrease your chance of injury. So just a regular pull-on knee sleeve.
Inexpensive.
Yep.
Yeah. And
easy to find.
Yep.
And will fit under your Scrooge pants.
And you should deal with the shoulder injury, shoulder pain as well, and get that handled. So again, it's another case like Tom earlier that just ignoring it will come back. It'll rear its ugly head if it's not rehabilitated sufficiently.
I'm not as old as Tom, but I'm getting there.
All right, John. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye bye. Appreciate the call. And good luck with the Scrooge.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Scrooge.
That's right. It's that time of the season.
Lloyd in Richfield. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My question is this. I had rotator cuff surgery. It was a complete tear. And also the muscle, from my understanding, was relocated while they were doing it. It had gotten out of location. Anyway, the recovery was super. Did all the usual physical therapy. I have full range of motion. I have good strength in the arm. But I took a small – I'm a skier. I'm 75. But I'm in amazingly good health. I took a fall last year on the slopes on that same arm. And I'm getting pain, and I've had pain since, in the muscle area. Still full range of motion, still good strength, but when I lift the arm up to get anything, it's very uncomfortable. I mean, it's not excruciating. And I'm wondering, are there any physical therapy or any exercises that I might do or take to deal with that?
So let me ask this. You had rotator cuff surgery. Was it an acute tear that they repaired?
Yes.
Okay.
You mean significant?
Well, no, acute meaning you fell and tore your rotator cuff and then they repaired it. Or was had you had a problem for a long time?
Age or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So that speaks to the quality of the initial repair. So if you fell and tore your rotator cuff and they go in and they fix it, then they have pretty good quality tissue to work with. If you've had sort of chronic shoulder pain over the years and then they say, well, we're going to go in and fix your cuff, which is kind of what I was getting from my rotator cuff was relocated, they probably didn't have very good quality tissue to deal with in the first place. So that was 18 months ago. How long after your surgery were you skiing and fell?
Oh, maybe six months or so.
Okay,
the
all right.
He had been, superb. There
okay.
was no,
okay.
no issues.
All right. Well, there's a not a small possibility that you re-tore your cuff when you fell, and that may be why you're getting the achy pain now. So, yes, there are things that you can do, but you really kind of want to know the status of your shoulder. So you need to have your shoulder evaluated. A PT can evaluate it, look at your strength, look at your posture, try to get an assessment of what they think the status of your rotator cuff is, and then design a rehabilitation program for you. So there are things that can be done, but we really don't know what the status of your rotator cuff is.
Oh, there we go. Good luck. Thank you for calling, Lloyd. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page for that. And Scott in Gaird, Iowa, thank you for calling.
Yeah, I had a question. It's not related to the snow necessarily, but I'm a farmer and I work for a farmer. And before, I've worked for him for 3 years. Before that, I worked for a grain elevator. And I spent a fair amount of time on top, like 140 feet in the air. And we would lift with a rope. We would lift tools and equipment up there,
yep.
sometimes 60 pounds plus. During one of those times, I had an incident where I felt like something slipped in my shoulder. In my left shoulder, it wasn't painful. Kept going. For the couple weeks following that, it kind of bothered me a little bit. Didn't pay much attention to it. But then it kind of turned into a chronic aching. And I guess just time goes by. But eventually, like last year at this time, it was giving me a lot of problems, and I started kind of doing a forward punching motion to try to relax that shoulder. And my body popped. Something happened in the backside of my shoulder where everything popped. Really, it really felt like somebody punched me in the back of the shoulder. And then the pain basically went away for a period of time, and now it's kind of somewhat back. And it's right between the end of my shoulder and my neck, kind of behind that shoulder blade, probably 4 inches off on my back, off my shoulder. And I just didn't know. I haven't seen a physical therapist. I've been to a chiropractor, and I've been to a massage therapist, and that usually gives me temporary relief. But then within a month or so, it'll come back.
Okay, Bill, what do you think?
Yeah. So, Scott, so it sounds like they've looked at your neck as well as your shoulder. Is that correct?
Yeah. I didn't hear you very good. The pain is mostly in my neck. Well, mostly in my shoulder.
Yep.
I haven't had anybody look at either my neck or my shoulder.
Okay. I'm sorry. I got you. Does the pain go down into the arm and below the elbow in particular?
Not down the arm, nope.
Okay. And any pins and needles or numbness into that arm or hand?
Yeah. In the back of my shoulder, I would call it kind of a burning, not necessarily pins and needles, but kind of a, not like a pulled muscle sensation, more of a neurologic sensation to me, not knowing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the neck is back there, of course, with lots of nerves, and there are also some smaller peripheral nerves that can be injured or sometimes entrapped around that shoulder blade in the back of the shoulder. You know, Scott, the fact that you're only getting temporary relief with the things you're doing, I guess I would pursue more care if you can, and potentially see a physical therapist who would examine your neck, your upper back, the shoulder area, all the way down into that wrist and hand. And they would look for, one, where can you try to determine where the source of your symptoms are? Is it your neck? Is it your shoulder? Or a combination? And then try to figure out, why isn't this going away for you? Especially with the high physical demands of the work that you do. I mean, you need more strength than other people based on your vocation. There are also maybe some flexibility issues that are putting more pressure on that shoulder. For example, if you're really tight or stiff in your mid-back or upper back and using your arms like you do, it puts a lot more stress on the shoulder as well as the neck. So it seems like you need a good assessment of neck, shoulder, upper back, down into that arm from those perspectives, try to figure out why this isn't going away for you.
Scott, does it bother you all the time or only when you're at work?
All the time. I guess it's worse when I'm driving, oddly enough. It tends to be when I'm doing a motion where my arm is reached out from my body somewhat.
Okay. Yeah. And you're having some pain around your shoulder blade, too?
Yeah. Like, when I went to the masseuse, she really found a lot of pain in the under the shoulder blade.
Yeah.
And rubbed it, and then it felt a lot better. But it's like behind that shoulder blade is the reason.
Yeah. There's some funky things that can happen that are actually, as Bill talked about, your neck and shoulder that involve both your neck and shoulder, some nerve injuries. So if you're pulling something, you get traction on your arm, you can get some nerve injuries that affect your shoulder blade and how your shoulder blade functions. And it'll cause shoulder problems. It'll cause upper back and neck problems.
And burning. Burning is a common complaint with that.
And a burning sensation. So you really need to get this checked out and figure out what the actual source of that is, because clearly it's not getting better on its own.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Scott. And Lynette, appreciate your call from Madison. Hi.
Hello. My question is about a balance between my pectoralis and my back muscles. I had a double mastectomy, and so my muscles are on top of my implants now. And I don't know if I should do my bench press working more strength or maybe like I used to do, or do more endurance, or what I should do. There's not a lot of research that I could find on weightlifting chest presses with mastectomies.
Lynette,
does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And, yes, it makes sense. How long ago was the surgery?
May.
In May.
May 1st.
All right. So are you under any precautions at all related to the surgery?
No. Okay. My surgeon, my plastic surgeon just said do light weightlifting, but I used to press a lot more than light, and so I kind of want to get back into that.
Okay.
If it's possible.
All right. Well, I'm sure, you know, increased strength would be good for you in lots of ways. And part of the balance question is not only do you want strength, but you need flexibility. And again, balance between the pecs, the front of your shoulders, and compared to muscles on the back by your shoulder blade area.
Mm-hmm.
Before you start pushing increased weight, I would really clear it with the surgeon. Sometimes based on the type of surgery or the type of implants, there are some restrictions that just you need to follow forever. And other times, after X number of months, it's safe to push as hard as you want. So, you know, so it wouldn't necessarily take a visit. You could make a phone call to the office and just ask them, what do they mean by light, and how long is this light restriction going to be present? And that'll help give you some guidance. The other thing with, you know, the bench press as an example, how far down that bar comes. I mean, the further your elbows drop below your shoulders, it puts a lot more stress or tension across the area where you've had your surgeries. So again, there may be some restrictions related to the shoulder range of motion that you're supposed to exercise within. And so again, that would be a question for the surgeon again for you.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Lynn. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Visiting today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, both physical therapists at the University of Wisconsin, about your potential injuries or the ones you've already got. Again, that number to call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody. Thank you so much for listening in, and join at 1-800-642-1234. Bill and Waupun has a question for you guys. Before we get to Bill, though, I did want to, someone else had wondered, going back to shoveling for just a minute, somebody else had wondered if you should sort of stretch after you're done shoveling. Is it a good idea to do that or just not worry about it?
Well, you know, stretching is generally always a good idea. And if you're doing any physical activity, they recommend, the recommendation, American College of Sports Medicine, is a warm-up and a cool-down. So stretching is a fine way to cool down, you know, to just get down on the floor and return your muscles back to their normal resting length. If you've been doing a lot of bending, you might want to arch your back the other way. And, you know, stretch out the front of your legs if you've been stretching the back of your legs or whatever, just to kind of cool yourself down.
Yeah, I think that's a really good principle. You think about the position that you're in repetitively. It's the bending forward and maybe some twisting. And so even while you're shoveling, you know, every few minutes, just stand up straight, gently arch backward a little bit, you know, move your back in the opposite direction, pull your shoulder blades back together to bring your shoulders into a different position. Can help minimize some of the soreness afterward.
Now let's turn to Bill and Waupun. Bill, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hey, hi. Nice program. Listen, I weigh 185 pounds. I'm 5'10". I can press 200 pounds. I'm 67 years old. But I usually work out with like 170, 165 as far as bench pressing. But my left shoulder's been acting up over the last couple of years, a little bit more each year that I work with it. As I push up, I can really feel it feels almost like a grinding. Now, I don't drop my elbows down below my chest. I keep them above my chest so I don't overextend my flex on the elbows to do it any kind of tearing. The other thing I got is my right knee, right behind my right knee. I feel like somebody's poking me with a sharp pencil right behind the back of my knee, and I really feel that when I start doing leg lifts and doing any kind of real heavy, well, not real heavy. I don't work real heavy, but I work heavy enough with, you know, like leg workout, like, you know, like just lifting and pushing on a sled. We got a sled over where I work out, where I put in, I don't know, about 180 pounds, something like that, and I use legs and push up on them. So those are my two issues.
All right. Well, let's deal with them one at a time. So your shoulder, what you have sounds like a fairly classic rotator cuff issue. So when you're benching and your pecs are doing all that work to push the bench up, your rotator cuff, your little itty-bitty rotator cuff, is working to stabilize your shoulder joint. So one of the classic things we see in weightlifting is people go up on their bench because their pecs are getting stronger. Their rotator cuff has not kept pace. As people get older, your rotator cuff generally degenerates. They've done, they've looked at the rotator cuff of people across the lifespan at autopsy and found that people who even had no complaints of shoulder problems had degenerative tears in their rotator cuff. So my guess is that you're overworking your rotator cuff. So my suggestion,
I'm 67, so.
Yeah, but you've been loading your rotator cuff for a long time if you've been bench pressing for a long time. So my suggestion would be to complement your bench pressing with a rotator cuff specific strengthening program. So your rotator cuff gets strong in parallel with your bench press.
Okay, I've got some exercise for that.
Okay, so, all right.
I know what they are, yeah.
Okay, good. So I do that. And then your knee, are you having swelling in your knee?
No, no swelling or anything, and actually it's even hard to find it when you try to push on it with your finger and find out exactly where the point is that it really hurts, but you know it's there, and it comes and goes. Some days it's really not unbearable, but it's real uncomfortable, and then other days it doesn't seem to bother me as much.
Does your knee ever lock up at all or catches or anything like that?
No, it doesn't seem to.
Okay. Well, there are a couple things that happen in the back of your knee. If you can't put your finger on it, my guess is it's not a muscle because your muscles are superficial enough where you could put your finger on it. My guess is that it's something deeper in your joint, whether you have a little meniscus tear that sometimes gets stirred up. You could have a little degenerative tear or a little bit of degeneration in the back of your knee. That's often where we see that happen. And it may be that some days, you know, a little loose body or something gets just caught up in the pouch in the back of your knee and gives you some pain. So
how does your back of your knee wear? If your knee wears out, your knee wears out, but how come it's like just...
Because
just in the back, I don't understand what you're talking about.
Because, well, we see that over time, epidemiologically, people who have pain in the back of their knee, it tends to be degenerative. So as you squat down, if you're doing squats or you're doing a sled, when you come back into that bent knee position, there's a lot of weight bearing through the back side of your joint. When we see degenerative tears in your meniscus, for example, they're often in the back side of the knee, especially in people who do squatting activities. So if you're doing any kind of squats, if you're doing sleds, if you're doing lunges, stuff like that, where you're bending your knee, you're wearing out the structures that are more towards the back of your knee. We see pain in the front of the knee in people who are younger, who have more acute sports-related injuries. As you get older, we see stuff shift more to the inside and the back of the knee.
Fix that or what?
It depends upon how debilitating it is. You know, if it's occasional and it comes and it goes, I don't know that I'd do much about it at this point. If you're not getting swelling, catching, locking, those are the signs that you look for that your knee is not tolerating what you're doing. Other than that, I'd kind of work on stretching, maybe icing the back and see if that helps.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in Duluth, Minnesota has a question, so let's go to him. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Approximately 6 weeks ago, I had acute back pain, and I went to my internist, and he ordered an MRI, and after the MRI, they diagnosed it as sciatica. pinched nerve in the, I think, the L6 region of my back. Anyway, I had an epidural after that, and my intern has put me on gabapentin. I'm at a point right now where I still have, like, a tingling sensation in my left leg right in the front, and I'm just wondering what long-term I could do about this condition, if anything.
Yeah, it's a good call and a really good question. So is the sciatica gone, and are you just left with the tingling?
For the most part, yeah. Okay. That's the only thing I could really feel now. I started out with a cane, and I've progressed to the point where I can walk normally and
okay.
be vertical for extended period of time.
Yeah, it kind of gets your life back a little bit. Yeah,
yeah.
Usually the sequence when a nerve gets compressed in that fashion and you have pain and you have sensory changes, the pins and needles or numbness, usually the pain, in terms of a sequence, the pain will go away before the sensation comes back to normal. So the fact that the acute pain is gone is a really good sign, and the tingling should resolve, but it may be a number of weeks before it's gone completely.
Okay.
And you're not mentioning any weakness. Any weakness around that foot or ankle area?
No, I haven't really noticed that.
Okay, so that's also a good sign. Weakness tends not to come back as well as sensation, again, in terms of a sequence. So, Jim, was there an injury, specific injury that started this 6 weeks ago?
I'm 68 years old, and sometimes I act like I'm still 18.
Yeah.
Lifting, and... It started with lower back pain, and I had that probably for 3 weeks, and I've had back problems before. And then suddenly it hit me one night where I basically couldn't move.
Right.
It was just paralyzing. But that's the only thing I can think of, is I may have pinched it then, or partially pinched it, if there is such a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, you can do that. The reason I'm asking is, if you haven't seen a physical therapist, and I know you're much better here, but most people do recover, and then the trick is, what you can do to keep this from coming back again. And mm-hmm. sounds like, as active as you are, I mean, seeing a physical therapist, even for a couple of visits, they can assess your hip flexibility, your core strength, how you do bend and lift. You know, hip flexibility is really important for someone who's active like you, because the more your hips can do, the less your back has to do. And then you put strengthening on top of that. And so you're at the phase where the emphasis can start becoming prevention. How do you keep this from coming back again? And, you know, a PT can educate you quickly of some things to do and not to do to help promote that.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you for calling, Jim. Appreciate your call. I want to give John in Beaver Dam a chance to join us. John, hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a burning in my one quad, my right quad, that a burning and a numbness just above the knee that I've had just very mildly for a number of years. And in the last 6 months, it seems to have intensified, particularly when I exercise, like doing treadmill or some kind of aerobics with the leg, that it gets to be just pretty intense burning feeling. And even at rest, when I touch the quad, it always feels kind of numb or dead.
Okay. John, any weakness with this? Difficulty with stairs, that leg tiring out on you?
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. You've had this for a long time. Have you seen a physician for this? I mean, has it been diagnosed?
I have not.
Okay. All right. You know, again, the fact that it's gotten worse and it's worse with activity, this would be time to be seen. It could be something with your lumbar spine where there's some pressure on a nerve. There's smaller peripheral nerves in the area of the hip that could be compressed or getting irritated somewhere. Now, you're mentioning in one quad, do you have burning or numbness in below the knee or in the other leg at all?
Neither. Nothing in the other leg and nothing below the knee in the right leg.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, that's good. But still, the fact that how long you've had this and it's getting worse over the last 6 months, I'd go in and get seen. especially when you start losing sensation like that. You don't want to mess around with that for too long. Thankfully, you're not noticing any weakness, but that could be next in the sequelae. So I think you'd really want to get this diagnosed as to where is the nerve problem, your spine, your hip. Is it compression? Is it some sort of inflammatory process? I guess time to go in and be seen for that.
Mm-hmm. What kind of doctor would you recommend I go see?
Do you have a family practice physician or primary care physician?
I do, yes.
Yeah, that's where I would start. And there's some different tests that they could order. They may end up referring you to a subspecialist, maybe a neurologist. But I would start with your family practice physician.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I got a Facebook question from Steve. I got a touch of serious tennis elbow every year from shoveling snow. Is there an exercise I can start now to mitigate that?
Yes, there is. And, you know, again, if you Google YouTube, you can probably find a wrist curl, and you focus on the lowering phase of the wrist curl. So if you set your forearm on a table or a ledge with your palm down, and you take a weight, you use your opposite hand to raise it up, and then you lower it down. Use your opposite hand to raise it up and lower it down. I would also get a wrist splint for shoveling, one that stabilizes your wrist, because that's really where the origin of the tennis elbow comes from.
There we go. Lots of great information today, and our guests, Bill Boisnell and Laurie Tyne-Brody, are going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. Bill's a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinic. Laurie is a physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And again, they'll be with us right up until 12:30. You stay listening. News next on the Ideas Network. Well, whether it's an old injury that you just can't seem to fully recover from, or maybe it's a new twinge that's made an appearance, you may have some aches and pains to deal with, and probably most of us at one point or another have that, and sometimes hard to know what to do about it. Well, Larry Mueller here, and Laurie Tyne-Brody and Bill Boisnault are with me to talk with you, share what they know about those aches and pains, and sort of answer your question, so I hope you'll join in. Bill Boisnault, senior physical therapist at the UW Hospitals and Clinics. Always a pleasure, Bill.
Great to be here.
And Laurie Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. And Laura, thanks again for being with us.
Excellent. Glad to be here.
Rose in Menominee Falls has been waiting a long time, so let's go to Rose next. Rose, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have a shoulder and a neck issue, but at this point I've just kind of self-diagnosed, and I'm not sure which came first or if they're related or whether I need to go in and have x-rays or see for sure what's going on. My neck, I get kind of strange intermittent problems with like some numbness or that kind of thing, or I had a recent couple episodes where I turned my neck and I got a kind of a shooting pain down the opposite shoulder. And then the shoulder, I don't think is rotator cuff. I do a workout class I've done for quite some time. And when we do the rotator cuff exercises, those don't bother me so much. It's more lifting my arm in an outward direction that is the worst.
Well, the neck and shoulder combination, it is a challenging combination. And some people, it's all related to the neck. Other people, it's the shoulder. And many people, it's both. How long has this been going on, Rose?
The neck issue has been going on for a few years. Like I say, I'll get these intermittent symptoms, and it's, you know, not and they pass fairly quickly.
Okay.
An episode will come on. I can feel it coming. And sometimes it affects my upper body and sometimes my lower body. But when it comes, I'm pretty well immobilized, but it usually goes away within about a minute.
Okay.
And that's, like I say, that's been occurring for
that's
a long time.
That's the pattern. Any numbness or tingling down into your arms or hands?
Yes.
Okay.
When it affects my upper body, Yes.
Okay. And any numbness, tingling in your feet? Any balance issues in terms of when you're on your feet? Okay.
No.
All right. The fact that you're having the numbness and tingling, even though it can be short-lived and how long it's been going on, I think it's time to be seen. And I would probably start with do you have a family practice physician or primary care physician?
I saw a few years ago I had a sacroiliac problem, and I saw a physiatrist.
Okay.
That I liked a lot.
Yeah, I think that would be, if that person's still around and you're close by, that's where I would start. They're already a little familiar with you, but they would know what type of imaging test or nerve test to do, and that would be the place to start to differentiate what's going on in your neck and then your shoulder. And then at that point, physical therapy might be useful, helpful at that time. But that's what I recommend. I think you found somebody you liked. I'd go back and have them take a look.
And good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Doug in Viroqua, thank you for calling. Hi, appreciate your call.
Hello. I've been having some intermittent numbness around mainly on my right side, but it kind of moves across my face, sometimes the back of my ear. And sometimes my eye feels a little sticky, almost Bell's palsy type thing, but I don't have the weak muscle or sagging. And I've had a sleep study, a brainwave scan, and a brain MRI, and nothing seems to be pinpointing the problem.
Okay. Well, those were good tests to have. I'd be more concerned if you had not had those tests.
I would add quickly that I have been seeing a chiropractor, and he has pinpointed exactly where I have pain in the back of my neck, just at the base of my skull.
Okay.
But in asking him if he thought that would cause the numbness in the face, and he said no, he couldn't say that.
Yeah. Okay. So when he pushes in the back of your neck, you don't feel numbness around your lips or face. It's the pain that you feel. Correct?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Pressure doesn't cause it that I notice, but at times I do notice it's positional.
Yeah. Okay.
If I have that numbness, I can turn my head a certain way, and it seems to go away.
Well, there are certain areas in our face and around the ear that are connected to the upper cervical spine from a nerve standpoint. More midline of our face, center part of the face, it relates to a cranial nerve, nerves that are more located up in the brain and inside the skull. So it's possible that a cervical problem can cause symptoms like this. It's really unusual around the lips related to the neck. But if you've seen a neurologist and they've done all those tests, they can't come up with anything, then trying something related to your neck I think would be worthwhile. Sometimes medications can cause strange patterns of numbness or tingling. Have you talked to your primary care physician about any medication that you're on?
I have, but not in depth. I think it was early on with the, and we kind of thought maybe it might go away, but that's something I should bring up again.
Yeah, I think that would also be worth pursuing.
Would mention that in the brain MRI, I got the results, and it mentioned small vessel ischemic disease, but it doesn't. It basically the impression that I get from the results is that some of that is due to older age, and maybe it's really nothing that's
right. Part of the aging process. Yeah, if they thought that it was directly related to your symptoms, that would come out in the reporting, and you would have been told about that. I think maybe checking in with your primary care physician again be worthwhile doing, and letting them know what's changed, what hasn't changed, and they'll know what tests have been done, and maybe look at medications and anything else they can come up with. But upper part of the neck is possible to count for some of this.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, as I was looking at some of our questions that we're getting via phone and so forth, I was reminded that in about a week, there'll be 400,000 people wandering around the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them are probably going to be shooting a deer and lugging anywhere from 100 to 200-pound animal.
Yeah.
And it's probably almost too late to start to getting in. Well, it is probably too late to get into physical shape for that. But
but you can still be cautious about what you do. So just being aware that, oh, maybe it's not the right idea for me to drag this deer out by myself. You know, maybe I should get somebody to help me, or can I get, you know, something I can drive in to, you know, lift it on or whatever. How can I do this safely?
And where people tend to get really into trouble are falls. I mean, really being careful getting in and out of the blind, your footwear, and what you're drinking or how much you're drinking, and then heart issues as well. You know, if you have a history of heart issues, you know, seeing your physician before you get out for that weekend would be worthwhile.
Had a friend who broke 5 ribs falling getting out of a tree stand after being in it all day long. That's a painful.
Oh,
well,
boy.
And those tree stands are small. You know, you're. It's not like you can move around and stretch or make a lot of noise or whatever. You tend to be cramped up in a single position, and so that's really difficult when you get up and move and you change position. None of your joints are warmed up.
Yeah, it's probably a good point. But most of the time, those injuries occur when people are either climbing into or getting
out of, rather than
while they're sitting there. They're all really careful.
But when they're getting out, my point was when they're getting out, they've been sitting for a long
period
of time.
Stiffened up a bit.
They're really stiff.
We go. Elizabeth in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I had a right rotator cuff repaired. Along with it was bicep tendon tenolysis and FAD procedure, I believe subacromial decompression.
Yep.
And I'm sorry?
Oh, okay.
And I was ordered to start physical therapy, and I went to my physical therapist, and when you are discharged, you know, the short stay unit gives you a piece of paper, and it said to take off your immobilizer and do these wrist things, like make a fist is the first picture. The second one is kind of rotate your palm up and hold for, you know, count to 10, 3 times a day. The third one is kind of a hitchhiking thing with your thumb out and that. And then the fourth one, you kind of put your hand down, palm up 90 degrees. And he said to me, I think my doctor's order was passive range of motion. I think it was that brief.
Okay.
Now he said to me, who told you to do this fourth one, palm up? Because he said that's not passive range of motion.
Okay.
Well, I read my op report, and it said I had, I don't know if this makes a difference, but I believe the rotator cuff had 2-4 sutures put in, connected to 2 absorbable screws.
Yep, okay.
And then the tenolysis, I said, well, I thought they put 1 screw in my rotator and 1 in my bicep tendon repair. He said, you wouldn't be doing any of this if you had a screw in your rotator cuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So can you help me out with what your question is?
What's a tenolysis with the rotator? Is that any suturing and screwing?
Well, I'm not sure. You'd have to go back and ask your physician. So typically with the rotator cuff repair, they suture it down to bone. Sometimes they use screws. It depends upon the surgeon's specific preference. And the surgical technique, the quality of the tissue, the number of factors that come into play to determine exactly how they do the repair. So what you had was injury to a muscle complex, your rotator cuff, and then the long head of your biceps tendon comes up in the front of your shoulder, and they did some surgery on that. You may have had some degeneration, some fraying of that. They cleaned it up. If they needed to do a repair, they probably did that. It could be sutures. It could be screws. So I don't know what your fourth exercise was, but my guess is he wants you doing passive exercise. So I don't know what you were doing with your elbow bent, with your palm up, but passive range of motion would be someone else moving your arm for you. So if you were actively moving your arm yourself, either bending and straightening your elbow or raising your arm forward, both of those would probably not be indicated at this point following the kind of surgery you had. So maybe that was his concern.
That could be. Good luck. Thank you, Elizabeth, for calling. I appreciate your call.
But if in the future, if you have questions about your PT or what you're supposed to be doing, I think either calling the surgeon's office, as Bill has suggested previously, and talking to the nurse practitioner, the nurse, someone else there, or calling the PT who's supervising the exercise program and get clarity before you do something that you're not supposed to do.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks again, Elizabeth. Jean-Marc in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. So I don't really have a question, but it was something that happened to me last summer. Then I was thinking it might happen, or not summer, but winter. It might happen this winter. But last winter, it just got so dry in the apartment, and it got just so crazy that I was like drinking lots of water. And you know how you wake up and you like have a little crick in your neck or whatever. And you sort of think it's going to go away in 3 days, but then it like doesn't go away in 3 days, and maybe it gets worse. And to the point that it's like, oh, I can't, like, look to my left or whatever. And this sort of grew and, like, you know, cut into my sleeping patterns for the next month. And then after that, my shoulder and neck and my fingers were tingly. It was, like, just so bad that I was, like, I had to go to the doctor, see what was going to go on. It's not going away, obviously. And then they said that my muscles became so dry that they sort of acted like a dry rope to, like, fray, I guess, my rotator cuff, and like, and then I had to like do a little physical therapy and stuff like that for a little bit. But then now this winter, today, and like the last few days, I've been trying to like put, you know, hot water on my radiators so like the water gets in the air, and drinking lots, and like sort of, I was remembering some of my physical therapy things to move my arm around or whatever. Because I felt a little bit of like tightness and weirdness in my neck. I was like, no, not another like 2 month thing of not sleeping and
deja vu all over.
But yeah, the winter can really do that to you with like the dry muscles and dry whatever. And I don't know, that was just a really crazy thing that
I wonder about hydration.
Yeah,
is that you know, if you're drinking your 3-4 glasses of water or whatever it is along with normal fluids, if that helps?
Well, hydration is important. To be honest, I've never heard of dehydration or dryness causing problems like this. I mean, changes in muscle and nerve, you know, tingling down into hands and things like that. I mean, Laura, have you ever heard that connection? Or
no.
Yeah.
No.
So
in athletes, yes. You know, who are working at a high level, getting dehydrated, but not for people who are, you know, living their normal lives.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in the wintertime, when it's cold, we hold it. There's tension from being cold. We're wearing different, heavier clothing. It changes our posture a bit. We don't move normally because of the cold weather. Listen, if you add some humidity inside your apartment or your home and you feel better, bullseye.
Yeah, bullseye.
I wouldn't do anything else.
Exactly.
But if not, then possibly being seen, especially with the tingling down into the hand. It's probably more than just a shoulder if that.
Well, yeah. And it's also possible if it's cold and he's not used to the cold, if he's sleeping differently, you know, with blankets up and holding a lot of tension in his neck and shoulders, as you suggested. That could be a contributing factor.
Yeah.
And thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. And Bob in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi, appreciate your call.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I'll just set the table and you can answer from there. In 2000, I jammed my neck and went to the doctor and was told basically sprained your neck and it'll take a couple months to go away. And it progressed into something really bad where, you know, just pain down my arms and all sorts of discomfort and sleeping issues, and finally went in and had an MRI to find out that I had a bulging disc that had a bone spur, and kind of left it at that, and ibuprofen and that kind of thing. And every once in a while, it kicks up to the point where it pretty much takes me out of any type of activities at all. And now that MRI was about 3-4 years ago, and I'm pondering getting this taken care of, and I'm wondering, is it as simple as removing the bone spur, or are they going to go deeper and, like, fuse my disc or something like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I can't tell you which of the two routes that they would take. If you haven't had an injection, they might start with an injection first to see what that does to your symptoms. They will probably re-image your neck. I mean, 3 years is a long time to see what has changed, and that may dictate what you do surgical-wise. Bob, have you any rehabilitation for this within the last 6 months, 12 months?
No. Okay. No, just... Again, just ibuprofen as needed, or, you know, heat, and it's really limited my physical activity.
Yeah,
down to about nothing.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Well, I would try some rehabilitation before you try the surgical consult. Certainly, we can't help everybody with the conditions that you describe, but there's a lot of stretching and traction techniques and postural things that we can work on to take pressure off the disc or off the area where the bone spur is. And there are different kinds of exercise programs or manual therapy that may be of some benefit to you. And if that doesn't help you over a period of 4 weeks, 8 weeks, or maybe 10 weeks, then I think you can feel more confident going into a surgical consult that, all right, I've tried all the other things that are out there. But I would try the rehab approach first before you try something that invasive.
Yeah, for sure. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I got an email from Marty who has an upcoming total knee replacement surgery. It has to do both knees. He's seriously considering doing both at the same time. Had a couple of friends who've done it that way and were very pleased with the result. And the doctor is fine with whatever Marty decides. What do you guys think?
Well, I think the one of the most frequent comments I hear is, well, I did one, and there's no way on earth I'm going through the second one. So if you need them both, it might be best to have them done at the same time. You know, I think in the past, people only wanted to do one at a time and so on. But I think now that the surgery's gotten better, that, you know, the risks of being under anesthesia for a lengthy time are lessened, if those things are all in her favor, you know, honestly, just going through it once seems better to me than going through it twice.
Yeah, and especially if she has some support at home, some good support at home, because it'll be tough in the beginning, but yeah, it'll be tough once in the beginning, mm-hmm, instead of twice.
Right, instead of twice.
Yeah, yeah. And there's exactly, there's no chance they'll make a mistake and do the wrong one.
Right. Yeah. Very good point,
that's
Larry.
Well done.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, we have covered a whole batch of things. Any in the last 30 seconds, any final words?
Just be careful out there walking around. Falls are a big problem, whether you're shoveling or not out there, and good footwear, and be careful what you're walking on. And
there are a lot of products out there that you can put on the bottom of your shoes to help you stay stable.
And I know we're going to talk about them some more the next time you're here, which is December 15th, a Monday.
Yep.
Fantastic.
That sounds good.
Thank you both so much. They'll be back. Bill Boisenall, professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, senior physical therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. Lori Tambrodi, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. They do a great job, don't they? It's always so much fun to have them along. And again, they will be back on December 15th. Tomorrow we talk with Kathleen Ernst about her new book, a Chloe Ellefson mystery titled Tradition of Deceit, and Rick Seney of FairCompare.com joins us as well to talk about airfares. Stay with us.
My name is Bill Noltemeyer. I'm from Madison. And the thing I like about public radio, no commercials. And secondly, it doesn't have any bias to it. I love the fact that if you don't listen to it when it's originally aired, you can do it on internet. So I listen to that quite frequently. I've included Wisconsin Public Radio in my estate plans. I think WPR is important to future generations.
Include us in your estate plan. Visit WPRlegacy.org.
Support for WPR comes from UW Credit Union, dedicated to providing a team of approachable, informed, and insightful financial consultants. More information at uwcu.org, where your best interest always comes first. Support also comes from H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing and Fire Protection, your family plumber. Dedicated to providing quality service. Proudly serving Dane County and surrounding areas for 86 years. More at H.J. Pertzborn.